Imagine a world in which post-traumatic stress no longer robs from millions who suffer.
You don't want to get help because you're embarrassed. You don't want to tell people the dark stuff that you've went through.
That stigmatism of you can't talk to people is so true.
And I said, I don't want to live this trauma again. Right. And he goes, you don't have to. Yeah. And I said, what?
The experts, they forgot to tell me I can heal. I didn't know that I can get rid of PTSD.
I just remember being able to stand by the water and look up at the sky and hear the noises. And I didn't think they were gunshots. I was like, those are Disney fireworks.
I don't even know what to imagine for myself now, my future, because I have one.
This is Life After PTSD. I want to welcome everybody to another episode of Life After PTSD. Carrie, I'm excited today. This is going to be a new topic for us. And you know, rather than give a trigger warning, as we have to do sometimes because of the nature of these stories, we don't need to do that today. I want the parents to listen up today, right? Therapists for sure, but parents, listen up today, because we're going to cover some things topics related to kiddos, right? For sure. And so we have a guest on that's an old friend of yours, Dr. Monse Cansado, who is a marriage and family therapist and also a play therapist of, going on 20 years now that you've known for a long time. So why don't you welcome her and get things started? And I'll just kind of listen to two friends talking today.
Yes, I'm so excited to talk to you. So excited.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you both for having me in the show.
Dr. Cansado has a wealth of knowledge. She could cover many topics. So, of course, we picked play therapy and nutrition. And I think we could probably do 5 episodes just on that.
Absolutely.
But talk to me about and how that relates to trauma and how their emotions, children's emotions are absolutely impacted by nutrition. And but I'm going to let you open it up. And first, just tell us, maybe just give us a definition of what play therapy is, because some people listening, I mean, even therapists, there wasn't a certification when I was first doing counseling. I didn't even know what a play therapy certification was. And since then I've learned, but share with us what that is and what it means.
What is play therapy? Great leadoff question.
Sure. I'll be happy to. So having worked in academia for 17 years and training counselors, one of the pieces, and being a child therapist, when I decided to become a marriage and family therapist, I really didn't think I was going to be working with children. And yet I was also doing some school counseling and landed with a beautiful supervisor of mine who was working with little kids and developed a passion for working with children. And then I started later my PhD, and later I started teaching, and I started looking at the curriculum of all counseling degrees. And other than if you are in a school counseling program and you're being trained to work with children, how little child therapy training there is in a regular marriage and family therapy program, mental health program. There's very little emphasis. Most of the emphasis that is given in these programs is how to work with adults, which is great. But at the same time, a lot of this folks who are going to be trained how to work with adults, then they leave the program and they're going to be working with children, and they really do not know how to work with children. I mean, talk therapy, as it's taught for working with adults, it is a completely different world than what play therapy is. And let me just give a definition for play therapy. So when we're working with children and we're using play therapy, I have a theoretical understanding of how to use play for therapeutic purpose. And I know that children developmentally, cognitively, they do not have the ability to communicate via words the same way that an adult would. Although I use play therapy, by the way, from very tiny, from 2 years old to really to anybody, any age. So I want to say that play therapy is not just restricted for children. I use a lot of expressive arts with adults. And I think that even using that brings another piece to therapy. But I think it's essential that if we're going to be providing ethical and evidence-based therapy to clients, I think it's crucial that we get specialized training for whatever population we're working with. So if we're working with children, I think it's a must that somebody seeks play therapy training and hopefully decides to become a certified play therapist through the Association for Play Therapy. Many programs around the country now have even online programs The two that I developed was with University of Central Florida and later on with Palm Beach Atlantic. And they were very popular programs because there were people that really knew right away that they wanted to work with children and they wanted to know how to utilize toys, how to utilize expressive arts, how to really play and yet do it in a therapeutic way and actually be able to process that play and make meaning as a therapist, as well as even utilize play with parents. I mean, one of the trainings that Carrie and I have is TBRI, Trust-Based Relational Intervention. And this training really has a lot of the therapy play, which really involves parents in using play for therapeutic purposes. So certainly this is a modality that it can be used even with newborns. There is another modality one of my colleagues uses, First Play, and she teaches parents how to playfully play with the kids, as well as how to use touch in therapy and really impact that brain and the attachment connection between parent and child. And let me just mention one piece that I think it's important for me as a therapist. I can't see doing therapy with children and not bringing parents into the picture in some form or manner, because I think parents ultimately are the ones that go home with that child. So they also need to become attached with us, with the child, and they need to work through some issues as we work together.
Which I love because it reinforces something that just walking into a counseling session doesn't change someone, right? It's the whole picture of what you do when you leave and all that kind of thing. And I hear you saying that loud and clear, and that's a very good encouragement to, you know,
which I think
is
crucial, because then again, most programs do not teach you how to really utilize parents to help kids the most. But with that too, the understanding, I used to say this, when my child has a tantrum, I have a tantrum with my child.
Yeah.
So if a therapist only works with the child, they're missing my tantrum.
I love that. I always love when you say that. I also love when I was dropping my own son, who's now 28, off to preschool one time, there was another child that was just pitching a fit, crying and having a fit. And I can remember the lady that was checking them in said, "Oh, honey, he's just doing what we all feel like doing some days." And I thought, oh, yes, because on that day, it wasn't my child crying that day. Yes, but I can still remember, absolutely, when my child is crying and pitching a fit, I feel like pitching a fit. Or internally, I am pitching a fit, right?
Yes.
And so I think it is so important to involve the parent in the play therapy. So interesting. When I first, I don't even know if you've ever heard this story or not, but one of the things I used to tell people when you lived here, because I miss you terribly that you're gone and you don't live in Florida anymore. But and we're going to work together again, I know. But when you lived here, my mantra was, I don't take any interns except from Dr. Casado. If you come from Dr. Casado, I'll talk to you. And now that you're not here, I don't know what to do. So I'm working on it. But one of your interns one time came in and was doing a sand tray. And I said, I don't really know that helps anybody. I mean, but show me what you do. And I will never forget this intern beautifully had this child show us. The child was having all kinds of fears. And they did a sand tray. They just put their world in the sand tray. And there was a little mound in the corner. And the therapist that your intern was asking some questions. And we discovered that the child had a family member that, you know, a distant family member that he never knew. But this child, a distant family member had passed away at the age that this child was. And it had just been mentioned at some point in passing. The family had talked about it. And this child didn't know how to express it, but was thinking about that and realized that was where his fear was coming from. Never had told the parents, never told, but they're sitting there watching this. And he says, you know, what this mound, oh, that's the grave of so-and-so, this family member.
Oh, wow.
And I'm thinking, and he didn't even know why he put it there. It was off in a corner. There was something else significant about it. And I'm thinking, and I'm watching this, like, this is fascinating to me. But yeah. And then I later that one of the other therapists, told me one day, she was like, "Okay, here, build your world." And she told me some things about myself. And I was like, okay, maybe this does work. But that was with the sand tray. But it
don't
was just,
question her things, interns, Carrie. Haven't you not learned that lesson?
No, but it was really fascinating things that you wouldn't think about, and that, you know, I mean, there's been other things that have happened.
What I think is fascinating about using play therapy is that it really provides a projective tool for children to work through their issues in a very non-threatening way, because they have a distancing when they're using, whether it's the sand tray, whether they're using drawing, whether they're using the dollhouse. And what I'm learning more and more after 20 years of practice is how much is within the client's inner world that words do not reach to. So any way that we can really get to process material that is there under the surface and help and assist clients to feel safe to do that, whether it's through EMDR, whether it's through art, whether it's through EFT tapping, which is another one that I thought, like you with the sand tray, that, oh, this is not useful. And then come to find out and giving myself permission to use it, it's like, wow, this is actually very useful. I think it's important for us to have an open mind to allow other forms in therapy that are not necessarily talk therapy. Talk therapy can be very restrictive, in my opinion.
So, Doc, I know it was on your heart today to talk about diet and how that relates to, you know, to pediatrics and kids, and, you know, even some conversation about trauma there too. And so I don't want to steal your thunder. What's your heart for that? And what are you learning? And what do you know? And what can parents know from you?
So I think one of the things that I have learned throughout the years, and I have a child who has food sensitivities, and all of us in my house, we have food sensitivities. So I have had to look at diet a little bit different. But whenever I used to be in the schools working as a school counselor, I would always be amazed at the food that children were eating. Now, we all know that food plays a huge role in terms of health. I mean, physical health, and obviously we have an obesity epidemic in this country with children. But I don't think we're really paying attention to what food does to behavior and to mental health. And this is the piece that I'm really, this last year, I really have dig into it and much more, because I think it's critical that we look at, A, does this child even have food allergies that impact in behavior? Or what is the child really eating that is impacting behavior and other mood disorders? I mean, there's a lot of evidence out there that gluten and dairy can really create a lot of mental health issues and also impact aggression. And yet, when we work with children, most of the times as therapists, we don't ask parents, well, can you tell me a little bit about what your child's diet is? What do they eat?
Well, and let's face it, it's not just children, right? Adults too.
Adults too.
Absolutely. And I think it's such a scary topic, because we already have so much mom guilt, right? I'm going to say mom guilt. Mm-hmm. I think there's some dad guilt too, but you know, the moms are the ones that we're feeding them. We're, you know, carting them here and there. And sometimes it's hard to have what we need our kids to eat that's healthy for them to eat. But yeah, as you know, in my own journey of life, I have one child that has a gluten allergy, and I jumped on the bandwagon and went off of it with him, and then realized I definitely am highly sensitive to gluten, and it definitely affects my moods. And the joke in our house is if I'm upset with someone, they ask me if I've had gluten, which isn't always true, but it definitely, and so it's, for me, it's been really impactful to think back over the years and years of seeing clients and seeing children about the piece that I missed in wondering, you know, what were we trying to behaviorally change these kids and find out the problem when it was what we were giving them, what we were feeding them. And like I said, adults too, you know, what are we eating that's affecting our overall well-being?
Absolutely. And also, I mean, we also live under the umbrella of a food industry that feeds us with lots of unhealthy foods. How often do you see a commercial on TV that provides you a picture of a healthy meal for you? That's rare. You get the chips, the Doritos, you get the pizza, all of those meals that they may be very satisfying immediately, but realistically, they're really, really bad. And the thing is that's interesting to me is not just like, I mean, younger children and it is adults, even the food industry. I mean, there's a lot of really bad foods for babies. Formula, to start with, is loaded with chemicals. And this is the piece that I don't think even baby foods, even organics, organic juices, they're loaded with chemicals that are not necessarily healthy. So we rely on an industry that we think is providing us with some healthy choices, and they're not necessarily healthy at all. And of course, there's a difference between food allergies and food sensitivities, like you pointed out, Carrie. But right. Many people are not really aware that they have food sensitivities, is my experience, or convenience is really what they want to do, and they really don't want to have to change their diets. And it's difficult. I mean, I know it with my child. My child feels very left out at school because the school provides food choices.
Oh, don't even get me started on the school.
Yeah, I
get so upset. Jeff tells me not to interrupt, but I'm going to interrupt you right here and say, "Oh man,
just don't be taking shots at Sloppy Joe's, Carrie. Don't do it. Okay, resist the urge right now.
Let me tell you,
it's a time honored tradition. I'm kidding, by the way. But
I want to share one time that I remember. I had gone and volunteered in my child's classroom, and there was this one child that it was snack time, so she got her little lunch box out, and this is what this child was eating. She had a bag of Doritos. She had a bag of the little fruit gummies. She had an apple juice, a bag of chocolate chips, cookies. And there was something else. And I think goldfish, which, by the way, is loaded with chemicals, too. That was her meal for the day. Now, tell me that this kind of food that you put into your body is not going to impact your physical health and your mental health, because I don't believe it. Mm. All of this is very, but the thing is that I understand parents that, yes, it's much quicker to go and buy the Lunchables, which are horrendous for your child and really not nutritionally rich, than having to fix a healthy meal. And then your child also has to really fight the peer pressure. Well, my friends don't eat that. Pizza, whatever else.
But how about the fact that they can just bring a dollar or 50 cents and buy a Coke? That the schools raise money on giving our children sodas, and they'll have one bag of maybe the veggie straws, and everything else is chips, cookies, you know, and the veggie straws aren't even that great.
But even the veggie straws, like, first of all, I'm not a fan at all, but I mean, those can't be good for you either. I mean,
I'm just saying that's their,
put the word healthy out there or whatever. Well, Doc, here's another question. How do you feel about like the food pyramid that we've been operating under for a long time? I got a hunch that says you might not agree with that one either, right?
Not really, because here's the thing. So I grew up in Barcelona, Spain, where food really matters to us, where we have healthy foods. I mean, I remember when I went to school, we went home to have lunch with our parents, and then we went back for the afternoon to go back to school. So
stop right there just for 1 minute. I just want to savor that for a minute. Imagine, as much as when I send my children to school, some days I don't want to see them till the afternoon.
I know. Late afternoon, right?
Right. Or sometimes bedtime, because it was a difficult morning. However, generally speaking, if we as a society actually had to stop and have lunch with our kids as a family, I just think it would be a totally different environment.
That's the funniest thing is I heard her say that. I'm going, oh my, first thought right away was, wow, that must have had a very positive impact on mental health right there. You know, that would solve
absolutely
a lot of problems. I'm with you. Sorry.
And physical health, because you had to walk back home and then back home. So you were moving, really moving.
So you healthy food, you have a healthy lunch with your parents, you're not eating all the processed foods and everything. Yeah. And so, yeah. And then beyond that, certainly, speak more to the lifestyle of Barcelona and the food connoisseurs over there for sure.
Again, it's this whole idea that you're supposed to take time off to feed your body and to really enjoy one another. Mm. I used to see that quote that you work to live or you live to work, and you work to live basically is is not the Spanish way of living. Now, things have changed in throughout the years, and many kids stay at school, but schools cook their own meals over there. They don't have all this processed junk that comes in plastic bags that schools have here. And they have healthy choices. Somebody has paid attention. Now, I know that there's a new movement in many schools that they say, oh, what we provide is healthy. But I think it's exclamation mark healthy. And still, like in Spain, my sister works in a preschool. And if you have an allergy, they are required to provide you with all the options to have your allergy needs be met. Here, that's not really the case. So children, they almost succumb to, I want to be like the rest, and I don't really have choices in my cafeteria. So well, I'll have pizza today because my friends are having pizza, and I'm going to have pizza too. But if you do have a food sensitivity, you are creating inflammation to the gut. And if you know a little bit about the gut and brain connection, you know you are also inflaming your brain. And what do you think is going to happen when you're inflaming your brain? Well, you're going to have acting out. You're going to have ADHD is highly linked to food sensitivities. And then let's not forget about the Coke. You know, you have a Coke. What do you think is going to happen in the classroom? And what about, this really drives me absolutely insane, what about the sugar and all the different holidays and celebrations that we have in the classroom that promote more sugar consumption for the kids, whether it's Valentine's, whether it's Halloween, whether it's somebody's birthday and we all have to have a donut and a cupcake.
Oh, yeah, cupcake. Dairy, gluten, often it's dairy, but I mean, you know, gluten for sure. And
try to challenge that sugar with the schools. They look at you like you're the crazy one.
Hey, Life After PTSD listeners. We're glad that you love other stories of healing, but what about you? First Orlando Counseling is the premier trauma therapy center in Central Florida with a full staff of trained clinicians ready to help you clear your trauma without re-traumatization. Childhood abuse, relationship abuse, a traumatic car accident, birth trauma, first responder or military trauma, even phobias. You don't have to live like this. It's time for you to heal. Schedule a consultation today by visiting firstorlandocounseling.com or call 407-514-4470. It's that easy.
I try to challenge that within society too, because we know that the numbers of ADHD and you know, related things are absolutely on the rise, and not just like in small ways, you know, major things. In fact, I was thinking about this not long ago with a friend, and I will give, you know, credit where credit is due. Some of this is an increase of diagnosis and everything, but that's not the only reason here. You know, and what I was saying was that as a kid growing up, you know, I didn't know anybody that had ADHD. Like that was, it was unheard of. We didn't even know what that was. And now it's, you know, it's, do you know the numbers on that?
It seems like everybody that I know has ADHD, but look at this one too. We do
because of the diagnosed,
but I don't think it's just the food. I mean, we won't even have a chance to explore this, but we're also talking about electronics in their lives that none of us had to deal with when we were kids and we were going to school. We were not using computers. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have video games. See, if we had video games, certainly we were not playing video games to the same level. Correct. I mean, I have children that will spend, last year I was working in a middle school, they will spend 10 hours playing video games and their parents are okay with it. I have children, I've seen elementary school children that get up at 5:30 in the morning to play video games before they go to school.
It is
what
absolutely
do you think that's doing to their brain?
But Doc, the crazy thing about that is those same parents will sit there and, you know, when they get a little miffed at the whole thing, they say, well, we didn't have that stuff as kids. We used to play outside. And it's like, but you're giving these kids access to this, you know, like, like that's the thing that's crazy. And it's funny when you were talking, as we started the conversation today, you talked about play therapy. I was going to crack some jokes. I just didn't want to steal your thunder, but I was going to crack some jokes in there. I was going, man, anything that gets kids playing at all, because kids don't play anymore. right? I mean, just in general, because we used to play. We used to, you know, I remember growing up as a kid, if you came home during the summer too early, mom, she wouldn't even let, like, the door was locked. It's like, you're not even allowed inside. Stay outside and play. And frankly, we never did that. We wanted to stay outside. You know, kids don't.
Have you seen the thing on social media?
No, because she's probably smart enough not to be on social media, Carrie. David, all right, take some notes.
Actually, David showed me the other day. It was a picture of a bunch of bikes in a yard. And then the words were, you know, before there was social media, this is how you knew where all your friends were.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Where all the bikes, all the empty bikes in the yard.
And so it's all connected. And that's all I'm trying to make the point here is that it's all connected. And at some point, you know, like I'm thinking of a previous guest we had on the show that emphasized the nature of personal responsibility. And yes, there are external factors. Yes, there are things going on there. But at some point, people have to put their foot down and go, we're not participating in this. Right. Exactly. And that's what it comes down to. So I will tell you
that as a parent of teenagers,
sure,
we take social media away. And I'm going to be vulnerable here and say, you know, the other day we told our child, one of them, we'll just say, hey, we don't want the phone in your room. Like, we just don't want it in there at all. And my husband walks out later and our child is asleep on the couch with phone in hand. And I was like,
I thought you were going to tell me that DCF came or something like that, too, because the child had filed a report for these parents that are monsters.
That was the first thing of the, I will say there were tears. There were some tears. And I thought, this is ridiculous. Like, this is ridiculous that we can't. Well, anyway, I digress.
Doc, I love these people. The people that I love listening to are the ones that, like, who's the guy that was the MIT grad that like just said, I'm done, I'm off the grid and everything.
I forget, but I'm talking about, you know, that
just says, because they recognize that we have lost connection with our natural environment. And, you know, whether that's food, whether that's working with your hands and just all of those different things, like, you know, and what I, Doc, I would like to know your take on this too, because I feel like we have definitely heard kids use a phrase. I just always forget what they call themselves, but like this generation that's been raised and all they know are screens in front of them. Like, I feel like they've kind of coined a phrase for themselves called like the test generation, but I could be misquoting that. And and what they're trying to communicate is, you know, hey, you guys, the previous generation handed us these technology devices and we're the test generation in the sense that you didn't know when you handed these to us if they were safe. You didn't know the outcome of them. You didn't know. And you know, for any kid, any teenager right now growing up that recognizes that, like, I think that's a profound recognition, because truth be told, we don't know all of the changes that we've made into their worlds. Like, we don't know, you know, I think about your world in Barcelona and going home as a kid. I mean, I would plead with somebody out there who could get on this show and could debate with you and make a strong argument that life has gotten better for kids now that families aren't doing that so much. You even said, you know, times have changed. People are probably not doing stuff like that, you know, anymore. So I want to find somebody that we get out there and argue that we are healthier now as a result. And I know that I can't find that person. That person doesn't exist. And so it begs the question, then what would it take? What would we have to have happen for our eyes to be open, for us to realize, man, we've got a bunch of changes that we need to make because we are on a crash course?
Yeah, but I think think about this. I mean, my daughter just turned 10, so I'm not that far away from when she was a baby. Mm-hmm. Think about the amount of toys, electronics, gadgets that babies have nowadays versus 20 years ago, where you basically had a stroller, if you had a stroller, because many cultures, they carry their babies on their bodies, which is great for attachment, right?
Yep.
I mean, I remember Dr. Purvis calling the little car seat when mothers would bring a child in a car seat, she would call it the temporary orphanage. Because you just kind of put the child out of your... So many parents want all of these gadgets so they can entertain their kids. I mean, how many of us have seen at the mall mothers with strollers and the baby has a phone, some sort of thing?
Oh, don't even get it. No. Attached to their screen where they can't even look.
Yesterday, out riding a bike, I saw somebody walking their kid in the neighborhood. And kid, by the way, was not even, you know, was a little bit older, probably 6 or 7. So because their feet were kind of hanging out of the stroller. And I thought that was odd as I was coming up behind them. But as I was riding, and then I came up right alongside them. Mom is out there doing her thing. She seemed to be looking around and kind of enjoying nature. What's the kid on their hand? Big, giant tablet. right? Big giant tablet right in the mm-hmm. hand. And I don't mean a drawing one. Okay. Sure. I'm talking about electronics sure. right there. Oh. And it's like, oh my gosh, like you're out and it was a beautiful day here yesterday. And the, you know, nice temperature, the breeze was blowing. And it's like, oh man, you're missing this. You know, you're missing this entire thing. And you know, it's seeing all, and this is not just a kid problem. It's all of us. It's when you go to an event and you see yes. everybody's got their phones held up and everything. I was at a wedding not long ago. A lot of weddings these days are asking people to put their phones away and not have this, but this particular one uh-huh. didn't. I'm talking like the entire audience has phones up and they're watching the wedding through the screen, not even seeing it in real, oh, wow. you know, real time with their own eyes. And it's like something is messed up about this, you know, and we're starting, so, like you said, at a very early age.
So apart from the fact that electronics impact our brain, and one of the things that we've done in my house lately is when it comes nighttime and we all go to sleep, Wi-Fi goes off.
Yes, yes.
Because it's still impacting your brain, even yes. if you're not looking at your phone. And, yep. and kids are still wake. The adolescents, they wake up in the middle of the night to be texting people and chatting. And anyway, insanity. They're not getting the sleep that they need for restoration. But I mean, what if we all agree to that, which is not such a huge life change?
Yeah. Yeah.
What if we all agree to turning off our phones into airplane mode at night yeah. so our brains could rest better?
Yeah.
But
would my alarm
still
go off?
Struggle. What's that?
I was joking. I said, would my alarm still go off? It will. I know.
You know, we'll get you mode. One of those
yes,
little
your
old
alarm
school
goes
bell
off.
Ones
yes,
that,
yes.
you know, yeah.
No. You can have your alarm on the phone on airplane. Anyways.
Doc, don't worry about it. I will go buy Carrie an egg timer. She can use that. Okay. Like we can solve this problem.
We actually bought our kids alarm
I'll get you a rooster. That's what I'm going to get you. I'll get you a rooster.
Because that was their excuse for their phones being in their room. I have to my phone in my room.
I mean,
it's
an interesting time to be alive for the three of us having this conversation because we all know a time before these things, right? So it's not
yes.
like, you know,
yes.
when you think about these kids growing up, they don't know that. They don't have a frame of reference. So we know and we've seen the dramatic shift, and yet many of us are still not acting on that and not making it's you know, Doc, have you ever heard the analogy of like, what is it? The boiled frog, the, you know, where you stick a frog
yeah,
in
right,
hot water
right,
and it gets
wet. Yeah.
You know, like this has been such a slow heating up process that I don't think people, you know, I almost wondered if we could sort of sit someone down and say, hey, write out an inventory of where your life was and your lifestyle was 25 years ago. And let's compare it to today. It would be so dramatically different that it might put him in shock.
Well, you know, I'm reading the book. That Will Never Work, and it's one of the Netflix founders wrote this book, and he was framing it in time. Like the idea came out in 1997, and I'm going, okay, one of my children was born in 1997, and he's 24, so I'm thinking about the time of Netflix, right, where that has changed our lives. And because I remember kind of the age he was around 5 and we were getting some videos. And I say all that just to say, you know, we can remember a time before that and it's been a slow process. I don't think it's been as slow as we think, right? It's been literally my child is 24, so he's still young. And he wasn't, like Netflix mailing videos wasn't even happening then. And now our lives are around, you know, Netflix and
well, you're right.
Services.
And,
I mean,
you're right. And define slow. I mean, slow is it 10 years? Is it 20 years? Whatever it is, it didn't happen overnight.
Right.
Is what I'm saying. You know, like that's the difference.
No. Yeah. And also, it is not just parents. So, I mean, we all remember when kids start in having cell phones. Certainly not little kids, but adolescents. But schools would not allow the phones.
Yeah, that's.
And now it is very rare a school that says, no, you need to leave your phone in your locker.
Oh, it's better than that. They require them, right?
Well,
they
require. But imagine
they
a school that put
it.
If a school put their foot down, though, I mean, can you imagine the backlash of parents out there?
Yes,
again, those
yes.
those parents.
Yes, I can imagine.
Again, the parents though who knew, you know, who knew what it was like to get if they had a phone. A, it wasn't a smartphone, you know. But again, I argue smartphones, dumb people, dumb phones, smart people, I guess, right? But if they had a phone way back when, it was so simplistic and you couldn't use it for anything, but it would get confiscated. You might get it back at the end of the day by your teacher, and your parents are like, "Good, you know what? Your teacher taught you a lesson today." The parent goes into the teacher's office now or the principal's office and says, can you, you know, you can't, it's so different now. And again, I look at this and I know I keep harping on this point, but I look at parents who know life before this and life after this or whatever. Like they're watching mm-hmm. their kids so dramatically different than what they grew up in. And yet many of them are nostalgic about their own childhoods going, man, we had it so great. And then we'll give your kids the same thing that you had. And that may be requiring you to put your foot down and to turn off the Wi-Fi and all of this kind of thing. Oh, I can't do that. I'm such a monster if I am. You know what? You're a monster. I think you're a monster if you don't, right? If you know this and you have this information and you don't act on it, what does that make you?
Well, the thing is that we do have studies that show, I mean, particularly developmentally, how dangerous extended time on screens is. And yet we are ignoring those studies because this is convenient. This is very convenient. And we live in a instant stimulation and gratification society. I mean, all over the world, really, that we want everything to be so fantastic and great that, I mean, like you said earlier, children don't even know how to play, and yet they have more toys than ever we've ever had.
Yes.
But they don't, and I mean, they don't even know how to play outside. You go to playgrounds, and playgrounds, most of the times, they're empty.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, now with COVID, even more so. I mean, we've added more to the picture, but...
And if they're not empty, a kid's sitting on the swing looking at their phone, not swinging. Right?
Mm-hmm. And even if they're talking to their friends and they have friends there, they're talking to their through their phone,
which
like you were talking about the stroller earlier.
Yeah.
But when we are walking and looking at our phones, and I've done that myself before, you're really stealing yourself from the opportunity to engage your senses.
Yes, yes.
And really let that sink in your brain, calm down your vagus nerve system, which, by the way, I mean, we know how much the vagus nerve system plays a role in terms of mental health. Mm. And we are all like in this very agitated state because we're constantly overstimulated. And there's another piece to this, but I mean, it's like the level of addiction that phones are bringing to us. I mean, I'm going to talk about adults for a minute, but I mean, you used to have people who were addicted to pornography. And they struggle through it, but they didn't have pornography sitting in their pocket, in their pants.
Mm,
now they do. Do you know how difficult that is if you're struggling with addiction to have a phone that you have to fight every single second, minute of your day to not or gambling or whatever?
Absolutely.
Whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you could literally run all of your life from your phone in that sense if you wanted to. All of those habits no longer require a desktop computer or a laptop computer. You can do it all from your. You're right. Yeah.
And many people, that's what they do.
They
many
do.
People.
Doc,
let me
ask you. You know, as we kind of land the plane for today. First of all, like I've been. Carrie can tell you, I'm like over here going, I love her.
He's mouthing. I was like, I told you. We're not
supposed to have favorites here, but you're becoming my new favorite. So we need to get you on again for sure. We got a lot more to talk about. But I would love for you, you know, maybe to give a closing thought on today's episode as an encouragement to a parent out there. And I know the easy way of doing this would be to say, hey, it's okay to have some limits and boundaries on these kinds of things. But, you know, maybe are there two or three practical steps right away that they don't have to solve all of this at once. Now, caveat, I don't want to give anybody listening, the right to apathy either, right? But maybe they're just overwhelmed and they're going, oh my gosh, I haven't thought about all this kind of stuff. Like, is there a landing point that you could say, look, if you would just start with this, this would be a good place to get started, you know, to sort of reclaim, you know, a connection to the natural environment, you know, nutrition, proper nutrition, et cetera, you know, to start the process of detoxing from tech in some way. What are your thoughts on that as a closing thought today?
So I would give you a couple of ones. I know how difficult it is to be a parent, but being a parent sometimes means that kids may not like whatever rules you create, and that is okay. We don't, I mean, parents really struggle with the idea, my child may not like what I have to say, but sometimes we just have to go with the fact that you as a parent know best what's healthy for your child. So I would ask parents, number one, to look at nutrition, what the child is eating. Number two, that they are spending some playtime with their kids themselves, because that's where attachment builds. That's where you have connection and great relationships that they can look back and say, I can go to my mom and talk about this because I have a good, or my dad, I have a good relationship with them. I would really put limits to how much access to electronics they have. And I would really pay attention to sleep. Those would be my number four ones, because sleep is critical for these kids. And I see more and more teenagers that are sleep deprived, which has a horrendous effect on ADHD, mood disorders, lack of concentration in the classroom, not wanting to do their academic work because they have a sleep, because they didn't sleep the night before.
Sure.
And really encourage social relationships away from media, that they have outlets, whether they have sports that they can go to or just take a child on a hike and with other friends, but don't stay home. Just engage in a video game.
I love it. I love it. Well, Doc, thank you so much for sharing again. I want to talk to you about a million more things, and I think that this is going to be so beneficial to our listeners. And so we'll have to do this again soon. So Carrie, you have a job to make that happen, okay. You know, for sure. And so for the listeners out there, look, you know, I can't imagine too many people listening today that this doesn't affect you directly, but as always, maybe this affects you indirectly. This affects, you know, you're not a parent, but you're an aunt, you're an uncle, whatever it is, you know, that affects kids in your life. You're a caretaker. And so we always love for you to share these episodes with somebody that needs to hear it. And as always, like clockwork, we'll be back next week with another episode of Life After PTSD, and just want to thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and give us a 5-star review and share it with your community.